Yes, I was ashamed, deeply ashamed. They had spoken very seriously to the others who had been in line before me, but I had the feeling that I had been in the worst situation. They spoke to me in such a way that I didn't dare to look up. I could only say, "I will try to make it up to you, and don't be so hard on me." Then they replied, "We are not hard on you, we act according to the law. You have no right to say that we are hard. We act in the name of God and fulfill the law, and if you want grace and mercy, you must ask God for it and not us." But they looked so stern and I was almost afraid of them. Though we were a small group, deeply ashamed. And I thought, it is good that we were brought to this hill so that not everyone heard. It is shameful enough if the others in the group know about it. But each of us had to think and study for ourselves, and we did not get the chance to look at our neighbors or to think about their lives and say, "You weren't good either." We had enough of ourselves. Then I said to this stern man, "May I at least offer you my wealth?" I secretly hoped that I had the gold coins in the sack. But he answered me, "We don't need your wealth, because your wealth is not our wealth. Well, what should I do with it? I'll leave it here, I don't want it anymore." "No," they said to me, "you carry it with you, you carry it back down this hill. It is the burden that you have taken on in your human life. It is a hindrance to you, but look, if you just take a look at your neighbors, you will see that walking is a hindrance to them too. They are also in debt, in a different way, but it is assessed in the same way as you. Just take your sack and hold on to it until someone opens it for you. You were told that they would open it for you when the time comes." I replied, "Then at least tell me what is in this sack. Are my coins in it, or have you put something else in it for me?" "You will see, you must not worry about that now." I had to drag my sack back down the hill, and we went back into the house. I no longer looked for a cupboard, and I no longer minded leaving the sack somewhere, because I no longer trusted the matter. But when I went a little way away, someone came and called me back and said, "Stop, you have forgotten your sack, take it with you right away." And I felt it more like mockery. I couldn't leave it lying there. They called me back and I had to get the sack again. Then I realized that the others were just mocking the sack I was carrying. Then the bell rang again and they announced, "Your way is clear." I asked, "What does that mean?" I didn't know what it meant, "Your way is clear," and I asked the neighbors. He said, "Yes, that means, you can, if you feel like it, go to the people and ask about them. You can see whether you still have your gold coins or what your son has done with them." "Well, that should mean that you have a clear path." Then I asked, "Are they all staying here or are they going?" I was told, "As each person pleases, some stay and others go, depending on how much they feel like it or, better said, how much they still feel connected and longing, longing for certain things or for certain possessions." Then I also studied whether it would be better to stay. Then I thought, "No, I want to see whether my coins are still there." And I went. But they were no longer where I had kept them, and I thought to myself, "Yes, my son has taken them." And I went to see my son in the hope that he would find the way to these coins, but he wasn't busy. I didn't succeed, I couldn't find the way to these coins. Then I thought, "Perhaps they have been transformed somehow and maybe I have them after all. After all, I can do something good with this gold in my world or buy something with it." So I didn't find the coins and that gave me some hope again and I went back into the house. Here we talked to each other, we asked, "Where have you gone? What have you done?" And we told each other about what we had experienced. We also laughed at people's attitudes and their stupidities and so on. You could see how different it was from the world beyond, and you could see how people lived so unsuspectingly and occupied themselves with things that were of no importance later on. But I was so attached to my gold and yet, since I hadn't found the coins, I had the feeling, "Perhaps they left them to me after all, perhaps I did a good deed after all, and this is the reward for it." Well, after a while the bell rang again and again we were told to gather in groups of 10. This time I didn't hesitate, I thought, "I want to go out and join a group of 10 too, I don't want to join the others from last time and possibly have to go up the same hill again. But it all happened so quickly, and when I got out, the groups were already closed everywhere and I had to go back to the same group. I had no other choice. Then I thought, oh, I hope I don't have to climb up that hill again with my sack. Then those nobles came again, and it was the same as last time. They showed us the directions we had to go. Now I left my sack behind, but when I had walked a little way, one of them came after me and said, "Here, Christoph, you forgot your sack." "Yes, I don't want it, I wanted to leave it behind." "No," he said, "you take this sack with you, because it is a part of you and it belongs to you, you can't leave it lying there." Oh, pain. I had to carry this load again, and I saw that we were going up that hill again. The others groaned too. We had to go back up, while the rest, we saw from afar, were walking on the plain. They certainly had it better than us, but we got back to the top. Then these exalted ones came up to us again and questioned us. I soon realized that the five of us were actually all newcomers and, when we had climbed this hill the last time, we were experiencing all this for the first time. It was so strange how everything was organized. Then we were asked about what they had said to us the last time, whether we still remembered the teachings. I still knew the basics. But it didn't stop there. They asked whether we still remembered what they had said about our lives. And then we had to repeat everything. When it was my turn, I too had to say everything that I had seen the first time. I had to say that I had been cursed, how I had been mocked and insulted, and I had to name those who had done this. It was humiliating to say this. One would have preferred not to talk about it anymore and to forget it. Then I asked, "I don't want to be reminded of it anymore, I'd rather do some hard work and start making amends." They answered me, "It's right that you have that in mind. You see, this realization had to go deep into the innermost part of your soul first. You had to admit everything you had done wrong." "Yes, I didn't deny it anymore, I knew it." Then they opened the sack and emptied it out. There were no gold coins, they were just pieces of metal, nothing made of gold. I looked at the neighbors. He said, "Yes, that means, you can, if you feel like it, go to the people and ask about them. You can see whether you still have your gold coins or what your son has done with them." "Well, that should mean that you have a clear path." Then I asked, "Are they all staying here or are they going?" I was told, "As each person pleases, some stay and others go, depending on how much they feel like it or, better said, how much they still feel connected and longing for certain things or for certain possessions." Then I also studied whether it would be better to stay. Then I thought, "No, I want to see whether my coins are still there." And I went. But they were no longer where I had kept them, and I thought to myself, "Yes, my son has taken them." And I went to see my son in the hope that he would find the way to these coins, but he wasn't busy. I didn't succeed, I couldn't find the way to these coins. Then I thought, "Perhaps they have been transformed somehow and maybe I have them after all. After all, I can do something good with this gold in my world or buy something with it." So I didn't find the coins and that gave me some hope again and I went back into the house. Here we talked to each other, we asked, "Where have you gone? What have you done?" And we told each other about what we had experienced. We also laughed at people's attitudes and their stupidities and so on. You could see how different it was from the world beyond, and you could see how people lived so unsuspectingly and occupied themselves with things that were of no importance later on. But I was so attached to my gold and yet, since I hadn't found the coins, I had the feeling, perhaps they left them to me after all, perhaps I did a good deed after all and this is the reward for it. Well, after a while the bell rang again and again we were told to gather in groups of 10. This time I didn't hesitate, I thought, "I want to go out and join a group of 10 too, I don't want to join the others from last time and possibly have to go up the same hill again." But it all happened so quickly and when I got out, the groups were already closed everywhere and I had to go back to the same group. I had no other choice. Then I thought, oh, I hope I don't have to climb up that hill again with my sack. Then those nobles came again, and it was the same as last time. They showed us the directions we had to go. Now I left my sack behind, but when I had walked a little way, one of them came after me and said, "Here, Christoph, you forgot your sack." "Yes, I don't want it, I wanted to leave it behind." "No," he said, "you take this sack with you, because it is a part of you and it belongs to you, you can't leave it lying there." Oh, pain. I had to carry this load again, and I saw that we were going up that hill again. The others groaned too, we had to go back up, while the rest, we saw from afar, were walking on the plain. They certainly had it better than us, but we got back to the top. Then these exalted ones came up to us again and questioned us. I soon realized that the five of us were actually all newcomers and, when we had climbed this hill the last time, we were experiencing all this for the first time. It was so strange how everything was organized. Then we were asked about what they had said to us the last time, whether we still remembered the teachings. I still knew the basics. But it didn't stop there, they asked whether we still remembered what they had said about our lives. And then we had to repeat everything. When it was my turn, I too had to say everything that I had seen the first time. I had to say that I had been cursed, how I had been mocked and insulted, and I had to name those who had done this. It was humiliating to say this, one would have preferred not to talk about it anymore and to forget it. Then I asked, "I don't want to be reminded of it anymore, I'd rather do some hard work and start making amends." They answered me, "It's right that you have that in mind. You see, this realization had to go deep into the innermost part of your soul first. You had to admit everything you had done wrong." "Yes, I didn't deny it anymore, I knew it." Then they opened the sack and emptied it out. There were no gold coins, they were just pieces of metal, nothing made of gold. I looked but didn't even look at it anymore, the first glance was enough for me. That was my wealth, no gold, nothing. And with his beautiful shoes, there were sandals. The nobleman brushed over this metal, and it clinked, then it disappeared, dissolved, no longer there. And the sack that I had been carrying was suddenly gone. Then they said to me, "You see, you had to bear this burden, and you had to see that your wealth, which you believed was so precious, is not wealth in the spiritual realm, and that this wealth, which you chained yourself to, became a burden to you in the spiritual realm. You had to feel this burden. And if you had not come to realization so quickly, to insight into your mistakes, you would probably have had to bear this burden for a long, long time." The conscience of the others was also spoken to in this way, and they were all insightful. You saw these stern people in front of you, and there was no escape. You had only one wish, to do something, to earn something, to make up for something. The others were also relieved of their distress. They also walked down the hill with lighter steps. We were happy, yes, we were glad, we would have liked to rejoice, because we had become so light. So we went back into the house. We then always took the same place, and from time to time the bell rang, calling us to step outside the house and gather in groups of 10. Then, after we had been freed from our burden, all of us could join a group of 10. Our path then no longer led up the hill, but we walked along a beautiful field path. And the further we got away from the houses, it was as if everything was starting to turn green. We had the feeling that spring was coming. Something heavy had been lifted from us. We did not know whether our eyes had been so clouded that we could not see anything before, but suddenly we had the feeling that it was no longer such a desolation around us. The path led us into a small temple. There was plenty of room for 10 of us here. 3 of these venerable or distinguished beings stood before us this time too, but their tone was calm, their words were sweet, and in general they looked so kind. They explained to us about God's plan of salvation. They said that it was necessary to first explain to us how and in what way Christ had brought salvation to mankind, and that everyone had to atone for their own sins and stumbling in their own lives, that the salvation of Jesus Christ did not consist in being freed from all sins in order to then enter the highest heavens together, but that Christ's act of redemption consisted in him opening the way to the kingdom of heaven. But everyone must sow in human life and then reap in the other world. So we were enlightened about the plan of salvation of Jesus Christ. Sometimes we took the same path, and each time something different was explained to us. When it was believed that we had grasped the most important principles of the plan of salvation and redemption, we were each given a job. We were to work on the side and be taught in between. These jobs were so different. For some, the path led to the earthly realm with people and animals. On the other hand, there were endless opportunities to be active in the spirit realm. Here was page 90, from Experience Reports 1960-1961. So I submitted to these strict requirements and followed these words, turned to God. Through the teachings I developed a different relationship with my peers and with people, and also a different understanding of them. This encourages you to be active in the plan of salvation and order. You want to make yourself useful, to achieve something. And the personal guilt that you have brought with you is no longer so predominant, or I would say, you are not ashamed in front of others, even if there is a possibility that the guilt you have brought upon yourself is obvious and everyone can see where the mistakes, where the vices may have even been. You are no longer ashamed of it, but you have come to the realization, you have agreed that you only want to strive upwards and try to do everything that is of benefit to the community and not just to yourself personally, and that you can take an important place in this great plan of salvation and order and achieve something there. Because these achievements that are accomplished in this plan of salvation and order bring the individual a spiritual ability. By this I mean, of course, only a small spiritual ability. First, one must purify oneself or enlighten one's soul and align one's disposition so that one is in accordance with the laws of this plan of salvation and order. That is what you strive for, and you have only one wish, to achieve something great. The infinite goodness and grace that reigns over all those who have become willing and submit to this plan of salvation and order is open to all. You are then no longer strangers to one another, but you are like a family, and even if there are hundreds or thousands with whom you have to live together, you see yourself as a brother, as a sister, as if you were facing a biological brother or sister, you are like a real family. But that can only happen if you are focused on the same interests. So, my dear friends, I was able to give you an insight into my life in the spiritual world and tell you about the consequences that human life had brought about. If you have any questions, our brother will tell you about them. I will withdraw again and leave God's blessing to you all. God bless you. Joseph, God bless you. Dear brothers and sisters, you were able to hear from a spirit how things went for him. It is probably best if you address the questions that arose during this story to me. Dear spirit friend Joseph, was this Christoph really a fraudster in his fiefdom for the sake of money, or was that just said of him because he was so stingy? Joseph, yes, he was so stingy and always looked out for his own advantage. He never gave anyone anything extra, but his allowances were so tight that people called him a fraudster. Dear friend Joseph, thrift is considered a great virtue by many. The line between thrift and avarice is always interpreted differently by people. What do you say to that? Joseph, spirits of God can clearly see the difference between avarice and thrift, generosity and wastefulness. You are not stingy if you can give something without regretting it later. If someone has a lot of wealth, he should give a lot, and no one has the right to say that he is wasteful. Of course, what is given should not just be thrown away or used senselessly. But I say that someone who has a lot can do a lot of good and one need not reproach him with being wasteful or with having no sense of home. That is what I mean. Anyone who has little himself can only give a little. The little that he gives is not so important in the eyes of people, but we spirits measure by different standards. It depends on the attitude. It is not right if a person simply keeps everything in his fists out of principle and simply does not want to give anything, even though he could give something and knows that it could be invested here or there in a valuable way or that good could be done. You shouldn't hold things back with your fists. I remind you of the words of Christ when he said, if someone asks you for your coat, give him your coat as well, cf. Luke 6:29, which is also aimed at the same thing. Dear Joseph, this Christopher was certainly somewhat materialistic in his previous life. He will probably have to prove in his next life on earth whether or not he can break away from this material and earthly thing. Joseph, after the teachings he has received and the work he has been introduced to, he will be tested very carefully to see whether he has become more generous and no longer falls back in the same way and has the urge for earthly glory again. It all depends on the insight that one has. The spiritual world can see whether a vice, such as greed or narrow-mindedness, has already been expressed in various lives. If that is the case, then you know that there is a possibility that this vice has not been completely overcome and can reappear when the person concerned is clothed in the earthly body again. But it can also be the case that such burdens only affect a person in an earthly life and are actually not deeply rooted in the soul, and that this urge for earthly glory can then be released in the spirit realm. Dear Joseph, why was the greeting of Christoph by his parents and relatives not allowed to last longer? Joseph, when you lead the spirit into purification, you want to punish him in this way. Later he was able to be reunited with his relatives, but first a few things had to be cleared up. When you are brought together later, the joy is all the greater when you see that you have made progress. Dear Joseph, it seems to me that this Christoph actually quickly recognized his mistakes. Joseph, yes, definitely. The spiritual world is trying to ensure that those who have burdened themselves so much, quick come to an understanding. This Christoph was given a heavy burden, he could have been banished somewhere, that would certainly have been a way. But he had to carry this burden with him, he had to feel his burden in this way. From this you can see that the spiritual world determines a path for everyone. One person takes this path, and with another a different path is found for their faster healing. Then it all depends on the person's understanding, some have this insight more quickly than others. Experience report of the ascending spirit being Christoph and answers to questions from spirit teacher Joseph by mediator Beatrice Brunner in the hall on Münchhaldenstrasse, Zurich. Template, tape recording. Next case. June 1, 1960. Magda has gratifying tasks in the children's paradise and with children on earth. Explanations about space and time in the other world. Greetings from the controlling spirit. Magda, greetings from God. I have been given the task of speaking to you, briefly mentioning something about my life and then reporting on my work in the spiritual realm. I would like to try it that way. In my life on earth I was a nurse. I loved the job very much. I cared for children, young and old. I gave them all my attention and I cared for them in the name of Jesus Christ. I wanted to earn my way to heaven through my work. I always said to myself when I was doing the most difficult care, I am doing it in God's name and in the name of Jesus. So after a busy life I was able to say a nice goodbye to this earth. I was not ill for long. Now I would just like to talk about the time when I woke up in the other world. Here I was surrounded by many, many beautiful figures. I wasn't really sure where I actually was. Someone was standing very close to me and kept stroking my face and saying, "Now you have your place in heaven, now you are in heaven." I didn't dare to look around and I didn't really want to understand that it was really like that. Everything was covered in a wonderful splendor of color. I was lying on a bench in a garden and when I looked around I saw the meadows full of tiny daisies, it was a carpet, beautiful. I would have loved to say to those who were with me and were making such a fuss about me, "Look after these beautiful flowers, you're trampling them." I felt sorry for them. As I looked out into the distance I saw children coming. They were shouting and singing and jumping. They picked these little flowers, and some made little bouquets, others made wreaths. Yes, I was happy to see this, but I still didn't quite understand what was going on. Then one of these beings who were around me brought a vessel, And in this vessel was fragrant oil. The Spirit who was so close to me and who was always stroking my head with his hand now dipped his hands in the oil and began to rub the oil into my face, my hands, my whole body, everything. Then I was wrapped in a beautiful dress and covered up. I think it smelled very nice. Then the children came to me, gave me their hands and were happy. They brought me their little bouquets and their wreaths, and they wanted to put these wreaths on me, and I resisted. There was a small child there who came very close to me, I remember it so well, and said to me, "Hey, you smell good." I just looked at the child and said, "Yes, you probably believe that." And the others who were around me smiled. So whole groups of children came and asked me to stand up. At first I had a little trouble standing up like that, but they supported me and it went quite well. I had to breathe deeply on the instructions of my high-ranking companions and then I felt very good. I also heard beautiful music from far away. I asked who this music was being played for and why no one came near here. I had hardly said it when a group of musical, colorfully dressed brothers and sisters came near me. They smiled at me and they sang and played. Yes, what was going to happen to me now? I could hardly understand why they were making so much fuss about me and giving me so much honor. Then they said to me, "Your task will be with these children in the children's paradise for the time being. But before you can go on with these tasks, we want to show you a piece of heaven." Yes, they talked about everything I had done in my life, how much I had overcome and what sacrifices I had made. They also mentioned here and there that I had sometimes done something wrong. But they told me that they didn't want to talk about it, because there was so much good that the rest could still be improved. Yes, I was of course happy to hear that. I was also a little afraid. And I did have a desire to see Christ, because I had sacrificed my life to Him. In His holy name I had always carried out the hardest work, and it had been easy for me. Then they said to me, "Of course, you will also experience Christ, but first we will prepare you a little. You will definitely be able to meet Him, we will accompany you to Him." And at the same time they explained that not only I alone would then see Him, but many others who had the same tasks as me, they would also meet Him, and together we would be able to appear before Him. And I was satisfied. Actually, I found it immodest to ask for something like that. But I did have a longing for Christ, because it was because of Him that I had had the strength in my life to accomplish the things I did and to live like that. Now they wanted to tell me something about heaven. They showed me the beautiful gardens, they showed me the houses from which all these brothers and sisters go to their tasks. What amazed me most was how quickly you could get from one place to another, and I asked, "How is time here?" They wanted to tell me about it and said, "Look, we already have brothers and sisters here who are concerned with time, we call them the Zeitgeisters. They are interested in the time of people, and they are interested in spiritual time. You will come into contact with them too, but leave it to these brothers and sisters to deal with it now. Nevertheless, we would like to explain something to you about time as we have it here in the spiritual realm. You see, where you are now, everything is so beautiful. Everything is blooming, and the atmosphere is so pleasant, it is not so hot, it is not too cool, it is simply beautiful. As a human being, you had a tear-off calendar to count the days. We don't have that, we don't need it. You also had to keep to your hours at work. We don't have that either, we don't have a clock like humans do, we have the spirits of the times, they turn the clock, but you don't always come into contact with them. Furthermore, humans have their seasons, from this they can calculate and read a certain time. They also have day and night, and they have their days of the week, and every day has its name. And us? With us, they explained to me, it's like if you went on holiday somewhere and didn't know when you had to go back, and one day was more beautiful than the next and they just told you, "When it's time, we'll come and get you." But that could just as easily be in 3 years as it could be in 3 or 4 days. Nobody knows when they'll be picked up and nobody cares about tomorrow or the day after. You don't have to worry, and you don't have to finish your work by a certain time, and you don't have to think about scraping together money. Nothing like that. Time stands still. It's always beautiful, and there's always a summery state, or it's always spring, or you go to a place where there's constant ripeness, but still there's no time like people have.